This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take a look at a specific area of medicine from an integrative standpoint. We haven't done a program like this before, and partially the reason is I've never encountered a physician like this before. She is an integrative rheumatologist. That's a rare breed. We've talked to integrative neurologist Dr. David Perlmutter. We've talked to integrative gastroenterologist Dr. Jerry Mullen. In terms of integrative rheumatologists, they're few and far between. And today we're going to talk to a doctor who is both board certified in rheumatology, which is the study of autoimmune disorders, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and diseases along those lines, as well as board certified in integrative medicine. And she applies both conventional medical approaches and blends them with integrative approaches in her practice in New Jersey. She's Dr. Ailey Cohen, and she's with us today. She's a graduate of Hahnemann University Medical School and currently practices in New Jersey. It's a pleasure talking to you, Dr. Cohen.
Thank you very much for having me, Dr. Hoffman.
It's great. My pleasure. So, first of all, you'll tell us a little bit about your journey, because you were trained initially in conventional medicine. Did you always have an interest in applying alternatives to your eventual practice style?
Actually, I did not. I actually had a pretty horrible diet for a lot of my life, and I really didn't think twice about the food I eat or the environment I was living in.
Typical medical student and young doctor.
Right. I was just trying to survive, let's put it that way. And, essentially I started getting into exercise as a means of coping with stress for medical school and for residency and fellowship. But I started to really start to appreciate food because I felt better eating better food than worse food. But my husband actually stumbled across a fellowship in integrative medicine with Dr. Andrew Weil that's specifically geared towards physicians. And I believe only 1,000 have graduated over the last 12 years. And I read about they were offering a scholarship, and I read for rheumatologists specifically, because as you said, they are few and far between. And I applied and I got in, and, it really changed the way I look at food and nutrition and medicine, Western medicine, and really the way I perceive illness in general.
Well, let me illustrate the power of this paradigm by just discussing, just so happens, and this is a coincidence, that my first patient today beautifully exemplified the power of an integrative approach in rheumatology. She is a patient who first saw me, and we commemorated it today. It was a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, suffering from a condition called polymyositis. Now, you probably know a heck of a lot more about polymyositis than I do, but it's a disease that is extremely painful. It causes exquisite muscle pain. She said that on a scale of 1 to 10, her pain was a 15. She had extreme weakness. When I first saw her, she sort of waddled into the office, walking very gingerly. And now she's exercising. She has a SED rate that's normal. She has a C-reactive protein that's normal. For our listening audience, these are markers of inflammation. She is off the powerful anti-inflammatory and immune suppressive medication that she was on. She was on steroids, and she had been on Imuran. and methotrexate, just a long litany of medications. But she undertook a very profound diet change with us. We told her certain foods she was sensitive to. We had her eating natural organic food. We gave her, you know, and we'll discuss with you some of the supplements that you might suggest for these types of cases, because I'm sure this is what you do on a daily basis. Lots of fish oil and vitamin D and so on. And it turned things around for her.
Go ahead, please comment on it. Well, what I was going to say is that, you know, it's interesting that you say that, and I try very clearly to talk to patients about the fact that in rheumatology we have a whole host of rather benign illnesses that are mostly pain-related or discomfort or fatigue, but there are a whole host of diseases that can be quite serious and quite deadly. And so, you know, having the training of a Western approach and having the integrative medicine approach and also the environmental health training that I've done, looking at environmental chemicals like mercury and lead and BPA and flame retardants and how plastics play into our health every day, you know, having that bigger perspective, I walk a very fine line. You really need to be careful which rheumatologic ailments really need a certain degree of Western medication that's FDA approved, that's been vetted through all of the evidence-based literature, and where integrative medicine integrates, which is what it should do. It should not take the place of necessarily. Mm-hmm. But certainly you never want, or at least I never want to put a patient who has a very serious rheumatologic illness at risk for harm because we're taking sort of the less medicinal route.
Well, yeah, I absolutely concur. Yeah. And I think that's actually one of the advantages that we as physicians have, and particularly you, because, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just trained in general medicine. You have a real perfect knowledge of what these agents can do. Some of these new agents are miraculous in their effects, but also, you know, their potential downsides. And I think that, you know, not to disparage functional chiropractors or naturopaths who don't have a prescription pad, they may have a tendency to say, well, they'll go on these poisonous or toxic medications.
Right.
But sometimes I say to patients, and they're dismayed when I say, I think you need, this or that really powerful medication because your body's on fire. And, you know, the analogy is, you know, when the firemen come to your house and, you know, your house is on fire, it's not time to talk prevention with Smokey the Bear. You know, it's we need to really extinguish the fire. But then maybe later, you know, with the lifestyle interventions, that'll buy, you know, the medicines will buy us some time and eventually you can taper off, which is what this lady did.
Right, and actually what I've noticed with my rheumatoid arthritis patients who, again, are not acutely ill, you know, they're essentially in pain and there's chronic systemic illness long term, but, you know, you can integrate certain healthy behaviors, certain dietary changes, sleep and stress management, and definitely certain supplements and eating patterns that may not only, ward off the initiation of Western medicines that may be, you know, down the line if needed, but, you know, we hope may take a year or two longer to get on those if we can avoid them. Or we can actually lower the dose of those medications by having a healthier lifestyle. So, you know, there's multiple benefits for integrating lifestyle changes because you may be able to push off the initiation of the Western drugs for a certain period of time versus even lowering the initiating dose or the maintenance dose. So there's value across the board. Of course, there's also value in lower other risk comorbidities that go along with these autoimmune diseases, such as with rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune joint disease. You know, patients often can, you know, evolve into heart disease issues and eye involvement where they have macular eye changes. And so we're trying to save as many organs and keep those organs functioning, keeping those comorbidities down and cardiovascular disease down. So you're hitting many birds with one stone often with lifestyle changes. And that's been really beneficial for patients because they're not just there for a knee or an elbow. They're really there for a holistic approach in my office. They're really, you know, trying to get it all contained, maybe lowering inflammation across the board. Because we know inflammation is such a critical issue when it comes to chronic illness in our current, you know, health establishment as we see it.
Well, is there such a thing as a pro-inflammatory diet or an anti-inflammatory diet? Can you illustrate?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, you know, really, there's a lot of science behind this. This is, you know, we know that highly processed foods you know, that are essentially processed foods or anything taken out of the earth and essentially molded and manipulated and added to in such a way that the food is really not even what it looks like to begin with when it came out of the world, you know, from the ground or fish and chicken and those type of products. The idea is that processed foods tend to have a lot of salt added, which we are now seeing a lot of connections between, or say some recent studies about salt and table salt and high levels of salt in processed foods and their relationships to autoimmune disease.
Yes, indeed. I saw that. That was interesting because there is some debate about, you know, whether we should restrict salt in all people. But, you know, you can't be simplistic and say, oh, well, we should all have as much salt as we want, because for some people, salt can have some pretty serious adverse effects.
Correct. And also depends on what kind of salt. Table salt is highly processed. It's, you know, it's changed in many ways, whereas, for instance, sea salt, Himalayan salt, certain other salts that are basically, you know, taken as is from their from the ocean, essentially, or from various parts of the world in the grounds, you know, these salts have minerals. They have beneficial additives, so to speak. They've been grown with other minerals that are very valuable to the human body. And every human being, you know, requires their own minerals and their own, they have a different genetic makeup, and everyone's environment is different. So, you know, painting a wide swath across, you know, everyone needs this and everyone needs that is not a great thing. But we do know that in general, in this country, we have upwards of 10 times the salt content as unprocessed foods. And we know that even in Europe, we have different regulations on salt content in food that doesn't get, you know, isn't heeded here in the United States. And that's for a lot of different legislative lobby issues. So we have very highly processed foods in this country, and certainly highly processed foods cause inflammation in the body for various reasons. Again, they have a lot of fats that are added that are inflammatory in nature. Corn oil, which is often genetically modified in this country, and can be inflammatory in its own right. But the oils are usually cheaper. The sugars are usually cheaper, like high fructose corn syrup. The salt is added, the sugar, enormous amounts of sugar that, you know, is very confusing on labeling and packaging is added to foods. And a lot of these substances really do cause the body to react in a negative way. Salt was pointed to, or table salt, sodium chloride was pointed to cause an increase in T helper cells, a type of inflammatory cell that is not a good thing when it's raised in the body. It's an immune response. So there's actually bench research that's showing that, you know, salt is really not a great substance for the human body when it comes to the amounts that we're taking in.
And I think some of the literature around this. I mean, I've seen some studies that suggest that. And look, there's no question that the rheumatology establishment they're not really big behind diet as a means of treating rheumatological disorders, but they do admit that a quote Mediterranean diet. Can be a helpful adjunct to the powerful medications that they advocate. And so what's going on with that? What are the studies saying?
Sure. Yeah, anti-inflammatory diet, as we're getting back to, you know, essentially there are foods that I say to my patients, there are foods that are going to inflame your immune system, and there are foods that we know really quiet them down or are rather neutral. And so plant-based foods, you know, a diet that's plant-based, such as cruciferous vegetables, carrots, any of the colors of the rainbow, you know, when they're not, you know, without pesticides at, you know, first choice, you know, organic is one thing, but you can also wash your fruits and vegetables with white wine vinegar and get off pesticides that end up on fruits and vegetables. So, you know, it's not all about organic, but certainly that's a better choice if you can make that choice. But fruits and vegetables tend to be the best substances to eat in terms of lowering inflammation. Certainly the whole cruciferous vegetable family, which includes kale, collards, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower. We know that, for instance, broccoli converts estrogen from a more pathologic form to a less pathologic form. And that's very helpful when it comes to estrogens in the body, which, you know, of course, we have all sorts of inflammatory estrogen diseases. Certainly in rheumatology, we have a lot of female predominant autoimmune diseases, and so there's a relationship with estrogen.
So you actually see, we sometimes talk about estrogen dominance. Do you see that sometimes that is the culprit in, you know, women typically get these surges of estrogen, you know, 35 to 50, and that may be, you think, causative or contributory to these autoimmune conditions?
Yeah, it's a great question, but then you can't, that doesn't account for all the men that get these autoimmune diseases.
So and they get,
plenty
and they
that get lupus,
bad.
And there's plenty that get rheumatoid arthritis, and so actually what it points more to in general is that, number one, we all have a set of genes that we've been given, but then we have this epigenome, which is the stop blocks that are proteins within our genes that decide how or when these genes are expressed. So whether someone gains weight or goes bald or has depression, these are all sort of stop blocks, whether you have the genes or not. And so that is highly dependent on your environment. And so, you know, diet has a very big role in this. What you eat, also the environmental chemical, in our environment, which is something I'm particularly, in tune to. And, you know, I ask patients, all of them, about not just their diet and not just their exercise, which is hopefully what at least most doctors can get to in a visit, but I go into a whole environmental health history. I find out what they are eating every day, if they're having sushi with high levels of mercury, if they're having fruits and vegetables that are highly contaminated with pesticides and really aren't aware of what they're doing. I ask them where they work and what their work environment is in terms of some of the VOCs in the air or the particulate matter that they may be driving in. Particulate air matter has been linked to increased risk of autoimmune disease. In lupus patients, particularly, the studies have shown. So it's not just your diet and salt content. It's actually, a whole host of environmental factors, because autoimmune disease is quite complex. And there may be a series of shifts in your epigenome that push you towards an autoimmune disease. But you can also try to change diet and exercise and stress and sleep and a whole host of other things and maybe ward off an autoimmune disease. But you'll never know you're not getting something, right? So it's something you have to do in terms of prevention, which is not always easy for people to do.
Indeed. Well, so I'm going to tick off some of the proposed components of a treatment plan for autoimmune disease. And we, you know, it may vary from one condition to another, but don't you agree that we can sort of take a generic approach from the nutritional supplementation standpoint, whether it's lupus, whether it's rheumatoid arthritis, whether it's polymyositis, scleroderma, these conditions have some commonalities in terms of their ability to respond to nutritional support. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, at least what we know so far is that, you know, again, a plant-based, clean diet, unprocessed foods, the right supplements include things that really you're not getting from your diet. So I really emphasize that the diet is really the most important way to get all of the nutrients, all the micronutrients that you need. And supplements are really just that. They're supplementing a diet. So in terms of fish oil, which we know you have to choose a reasonable brand, a reasonable quality, and understand how to buy that product is very important, or else you're wasting a lot of time and effort and money. Also, we have special spices and herbs that have been around for thousands of years in both the Western, Chinese history and Ayurvedic Indian history, such as turmeric and cinnamon, ginger, garlic. These are all wonderful herbs and spices that have been well known to lower inflammation in the body, as well as cooked Asian mushrooms, quality fish and chicken, where we know that it's wild-caught fish when able to get that, because you are what you eat and they are what they eat. So you want to have really rich wild-caught fish when possible, grass-fed beef when possible. And then certainly there's drinks like tea. Tea has ellagic acid.
Yeah,
I get
that's
trouble
a tough
saying
one.
It every time.
Right.
It's a tough one, so I just say tea. But anyway, it has a wonderful substance in EGCG, which is this very long name, which is very immune suppressing and very helpful when it comes to quieting down the immune system from any source that the body may be inflamed, whether it's from the gut and changes in the gut biome or from the outside, such as environmental chemicals like, you know, personal care products or, you know, pollutants in the air.
So it's a detoxifier. It helps to promote detoxification.
Sure. It quiets the body down. I wouldn't say it's a detoxifier, but it quiets the body down. Some of the detox foods, you know, there's a whole list of those in terms of actually binding heavy metals. Mm-hmm. Or increasing glutathione in the liver, or you know, sulfur-rich foods like onions and mushrooms are wonderful for liver detoxification. Glutathione-rich foods are the cruciferous vegetables, which I can't say enough about, are wonderful for stimulating the liver to do its job of detoxification. And then, of course, we have a whole host of things that bind mercury and methylmercury and lead, like lactobacillus, which you can get in yogurts, zinc, which is wonderful at binding methylmercury, and you can get that from pumpkin seeds. Cilantro has also been shown to bind methylmercury. So there's a whole host of foods and spices that there's reasonable studies showing that they can help in the detoxification process. But I believe firmly that food is your number one way to lower inflammation. And going back to that root of clean diet is so important.
How about vitamin D? Because I've noticed, and you know, this didn't happen until recently, a lot of rheumatologists are now checking their patient for vitamin D. There's not a lot of buy-in about necessarily that diet's going to help, or you know, handfuls of nutraceuticals, but they're starting to look at vitamin D, and they're starting to ask patients to take more vitamin D.
Yeah, well, vitamin D is very interesting because I don't think a lot of Western medicine really took it seriously for a long time, because we've had some sort of foibles with some of our vitamins in the past where it became a hot vitamin like vitamin E, and then we found some problems with it. But vitamin D is remarkable because, you know, we've seen from an epidemiology standpoint that low levels of vitamin D are correlated with higher rates or higher risk of getting multiple sclerosis. That's why, you know, people around the equator, which who get more sunlight, tend to have lower rates of multiple sclerosis. We know that low levels are associated with Alzheimer's disease, and it is also associated with various cancers. Pancreatic cancer is associated with low vitamin D levels. Heart disease is associated with low vitamin D levels. So, you know, it's one of those vitamins, which is a fat-soluble vitamin, which you have to be careful. People shouldn't go out and take their, you know, thousands of international units of vitamin D on their own. They need to be monitored because it isn't washed out freely like water-soluble vitamins. But vitamin D is remarkable because we can measure it and we can treat it. And there's very few things in life that have such a cause and effect. Even in medicine, but vitamin D is one of those, and it's worth measuring, it's worth monitoring, and it's worth treating if possible.
Do you see any benefits in some of your patients for elimination of gluten? Because we emphasize that sometimes in mysterious autoimmune conditions, perhaps there's an impetus to inflammation or autoimmunity from the contribution of gluten, even if the patient doesn't have full-blown celiac disease.
Sure. So my feelings are on gluten are, you know, I kind of step back a little and I say, well, listen, gluten may certainly be a problem in many of my patients. Really, if they follow a strict gluten-free diet, and there's nuances to that, they feel better no matter whether they tested gluten-sensitive or not, or celiac disease positive or not. And so I encourage anything that's non-medicinal that makes people feel better. That's a harmless and rather tedious but rather harmless way to solve ills. However, I also say, you know, gluten is just one of the factors that may be irritating the gut, which we know is very highly regulatory to the immune system. And there's other substances that we have to worry about in the gut, which again goes back to my environmental health slant on things, which is coloring, food dyes, food preservatives, other chemicals like emulsifiers that are added to foods to make them smooth or creamy.
You're thinking carrageenan, for example, is a
carrageenan is
an irritant.
It's made from red yeast, and it's used in a whole host of organic dairy products. However, it is an irritant to the gut and to the stomach lining or small intestine lining. And so it's not really just about gluten. You really want to go in knowing all of the things that may irritate the gut, or you're sort of only getting partial view of the situation. And again, whatever you dump into your stomach it may be forgotten after you chew it, but it actually can have systemic effects. And you want to really think about not just thinking about gluten and cleaning up the diet, but what pesticides are on your food if you can avoid them, what colorings and dyes and other things, what things are put on your skin that actually go through your skin and can cause an inflammatory response. So these are all very important. The air you breathe, you know, the air fresheners that are in your house that you plug in, these are very inflammatory substances that people should really think about, not just gluten.
Well, this is a good point at which to pause, because we generally divide our podcasts into two parts. And you introduced the subject of the gut or the microbiome. That's a buzzword these days in medicine. Mm-hmm. And recently we talked to Dr. Alessio Fasano, who's an expert on gluten. And he coined a phrase which I really like, which is, unlike Las Vegas, what happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. And it may have implications for systemic illnesses and in rheumatology in particular. So when we return in part two, let's take a look at the role of the microbiome, the potential for leaky gut syndrome or altered intestinal permeability to have an impact on what seems to be remote diseases. You know, when it hurts in your fingers and toes, it may actually emanate from your GI tract. Sure. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest is Dr. Ailey Cohen. That is, for those of you interested in finding Dr. Cohen, she practices in New Jersey. It's actually, it's spelled Ally. It's A-L-Y, but pronounced Ailey. And Cohen's the usual spelling. And just for audience listening to part one, you're located where?
I'm in Monroe, New Jersey, near Princeton,
Great. And Monroe, you actually consult with patients, not just from your region, mm-hmm. but patients, I think, from all over the country, and you do some telemedicine as well.
Yes, so, I do. I found people are interested in that, and they're too far to get here. So I say, certainly, let's do some telemedicine and see what we can help each other with.
Well, great. Okay, let's pause, and then we'll return in part two to delve deeper in some of these themes. We're talking integrative rheumatology with integrative rheumatologist, Dr. Ailey Cohen. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.